This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Hello, everybody. This is Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio, and happy Teen Literature Day to all of you. It is National Pet Day as well, so be sure and post pictures of your pets and be good to those little fur babies. And then tomorrow is Beverly Cleary's 103rd birthday. So if you're familiar with Beverly Cleary, she's written a ton of books. She's been around forever, and so if you have a chance, go on her website and wish her a very happy 103rd birthday. But today, we have a fabulous guest, Amy Brown, who's someone I've been talking back and forth with on social media for a while. So Amy is a writer, avid reader, and often blogging her thoughts on chick lit books. Little Gray Dress is her first novel. She's currently studying for her bachelor's degree in English writing. She spends much of her time writing her next book, doing homework, raising three teens, binge-watching shows on Netflix, and obsessively cleaning and redecorating her house. You'll need to come to my house, Amy, because I need some help with that. She's fluent in sarcasm, and she grew up in Oregon, but she's now living in Montana with her husband of 20-plus years. And three children, and many, many pets. Her newest book, The Last Dance, will be coming out next week on the 16th. There is a pre-order as well as a link in the write-up of the show. And after the show, you can find her on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, BookBub, Pinterest, and her website. All those links are up in the write-up of the show. So welcome, Miss Amy Brown. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I know you guys are getting a bit of cold weather this week. How bad has it been with you guys?
We were a little bit. It snowed yesterday, but it didn't stick. So pretty much except for the plow piles, all of our snow is gone now. So yay.
Oh, okay. So are you guys not in that cyclone bomb that they've been talking about on the weather?
No, it looks like that one's in Billings, which is about 4 or 5 hours south of us. So it just missed us. Thank goodness.
Oh, goodness, yeah, no kidding. I have family in Billings, so I'll have to check in on them later.
Yeah.
So all of you that are maybe stuck inside, I have a really good – Amy's got some really good books that she's written. So tell me, in the process of raising kids and having a crazy household with pets and everything else, what was the catalyst that made you say, you know what, I want to write a book?
You know, one day I just started, my kids were napping and I didn't have anything to do. We didn't even have the internet, but I had a computer. So I just started writing and I wrote this story. I wish I still had it. It was long and I would daydream about it while I was at my boring job. And it kind of just was a way to take me out of that reality of I only see my coworkers. I only wipe my kids' butts all day long. So it's like, yeah, I was like, please take me away to the story or any story.
Exactly. And so you're a big reader. What is always on your to-be-read pile? Are there certain authors or certain genres? What do you always have there?
Always Sophie Kinsella. I fell in love with her right off the bat. Cecilia Ahern, hers is another that I love everything she writes. But otherwise, I look for pretty covers and anything that might make me laugh. I like to laugh. I don't like to be all depressed when I'm done, but yeah, a book that can make me laugh, and it's going on my list.
Excellent. Well, I noticed that on your BookBub your author page, that Sophie Kinsella
uh-huh.
was definitely somebody that you recommended, and she does have fabulous book covers.
She does, and they're always changing, it seems, but I want every single one.
Yes. So if you've not read Sophie Kinsella, she is the author of the Shopaholic series.
Mm-hmm.
So pick those up. They're a lot of fun. And then, so you've got, you read things that are more upbeat and, you know, it is, you're right. It's an escape. You want to walk away from it feeling upbeat and happy.
Yeah.
Was that pretty much what you read growing up, or did you read a variety of things growing up?
Growing up, it was kind of the same. So I was totally addicted to the Babysitter's Club and I still own all of my original copies. And Judy Blume had this book, I think it was called As Long As We're Together, and I must have read that 5,000 times throughout junior high and high school. So it was kind of the same thing, all kind of humorous love story somewhere in there. Yeah, I'm just pretty basic, I guess.
Well, no, I mean, everybody's got their niche, you know, what they love to read. You know, I have had friends of mine that, you know, love reading nothing but thrillers because that's their thing. But, you know, I think when you find something that really makes your day, I think that that can absolutely change perspective for sure. So tell me about your very first book, The Little Gray Dress. Where did you come up with the idea for this?
So Little Gray Dress was me finally pushing myself during one NaNoWriMo to finally just get something written. And I went into it with no notes, no nothing like that. I just wrote straight through for like 2 weeks, and that's kind of what came out.
What's the story?
The story is about a girl who breaks up with her boyfriend because she has caught him in a compromising position. And she moves away, but she has to come back for her brother's wedding, and she has to face this man again. And so there's all kinds of shenanigans that go on. And then she has to decide if, you know, she's willing to overlook what she thought she knew so long ago.
Oh, so a definite twist in the matter.
Yeah, there is. So there's little twists that come and go. You know, it's kind of one of those typical chick lit, over-the-top, dramatic. I laughed as I wrote it. I don't know if anybody else will, but it's full of just kind of nonsense, but I loved it. It was just fun.
But don't you find that, you know, you say that, but don't you find that you see those bits everywhere? Like, it just, human nature is just so weirdly complicated and sometimes typical or what's the word I'm trying to think of? Predictable. And yet we put it in there and people think it's a little bit over the top, but we see it all the time. You know, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. And it's always out there. So those little not realistic things crack me up so much because maybe it's not realistic for that person's world, but everything in my book has either actually happened to somebody I know or I can picture it happening. So it's like, it might be over the top, but there's no way it's not realistic.
Right. Exactly. I used to work in the emergency room and I'd come home and talk to my mom and I'd kind of just kind of give her a general overview and she'd look at me and say, "This can't be true." And I'm like, "It is."
Me too. I've worked in the ER too and I have the exact same story.
Yeah. And it's really quite impressive. When I worked in Dallas, I worked at the hospital connected to Parkland. We were the pediatric part. Apparently the ER in Parkland was kind of like reality TV and people would literally take buses and cabs to sit with their lunches in the waiting room to see the chaos unfold.
That is so funny.
So it's very strange.
Yeah.
So where do you go to see chaos unfold?
Where do I go to see chaos unfold?
Yes.
Well, I live in a tiny little town, so there's not much going on here. But I do watch a lot of reality TV and a lot of, like, YouTube. And so I'm addicted to that kind of nonsense. And I just think, you know, some of these shows make you feel like you're, like, the smartest person on the planet. And it's, like, those are the moments where you're, like, that'd be good in a book.
Yes.
It's just, you know.
There was a brilliant, I rarely watched it, but it was an episode of Cops, and I just happened to catch it where this gentleman, let's say he looked a little haggard, and the police officer's talking to him, and he's saying, do you have any drugs on you? And the man's very adamantly saying no, while there is a joint tucked behind his ear. And and the cop was like, you could see he was really trying not to laugh. And he said, "Are you sure? Are you sure? There's no, you know, no, sir, no, officer. There's nothing." You know. And this went on for probably a minute.
Yeah.
And finally, the police officer pulled the marijuana out from behind the guy's ear, the cigarette, and shows it to him. And he's like, "Wow, you're really good." You can't even.
Too funny. That's exactly the stuff I'm talking about. The stuff that's so obvious that you're just like, "How do you tie your shoes?"
So you have a little gray dress, and then you had, and then your next book was The Lucky Dress.
My next book was a republication of Little Gray Dress because I had a hard time with my publisher.
Okay.
So So I moved to Aria, and they, the first thing they wanted to do was republish Little Gray Dress. So it is now the Lucky Dress, and it's had a rewrite, so it's bigger than before, but it's still the same story.
Still the same story. And the cover's beautiful.
Yeah. It is. I love it.
Did you have any say, or was it just one of those things of you filled out the sheet? So anybody that's not familiar, when you have a book, you don't get to decide the cover 9 times out of 10. So you fill out a sheet, you tell the graphic artist what you're hoping, and all the, you know, answer all these questions about it, and then you hope that your cover looks like what you're picturing. And it's a beautiful cover.
It is. I didn't have much of a say. But they do send it to me, like the publisher will send you what they've created. And I suppose if I said no,
sure,
something could be done, but I loved it, so everything was good there.
Yeah, and now you have The Last Dance, and that's coming up next week. It'll be live on the 16th. So tell me, how did you come to this story?
So this story was actually the story that was kind of brewing in my head when I wrote my first book, but I just couldn't find the right characters. And when I did, they came at me, and this one's more of a contemporary romance. So it's about Henry and Ambry. It's written from both their points of view, and they have had a traumatic event in their past. They've been best friends since childhood, but this traumatic event pulled them apart. And so this book is following them through the aftermath of that to see if they can find their way and what they want.
Is it, was it a story that you were saying that you had been kind of brewing in your head when you were writing the first book? How did you come to this story? How did you create this one?
So I had, this is a terrible thing, but I've had a few close friends lose their spouses in the last couple of years. And so I've kind of watched them through that process. And so there is a character that loses a spouse in this. And I try to take all of that grace and tact, depression, all that stuff from these wonderful women that I know who have gone through it and tried to put it into a book. So it's not based on any one story, but it's kind of a mixture of the way I saw these women handle grief. And then I threw in, you know, the romantic comedy part of it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, because you do have to laugh.
You do. And I mean, and people who are mourning laugh. And so, yeah, there's so much that goes into it. But I don't know. I just wanted to turn a little bit of a different direction because The Lucky Dress is so light that this one is a little bit heavier. But still funny. I mean, I snort laugh through one of the entire chapters. And I wrote it.
Well, right. And, you know, it's years ago, I was at a talk. Sandy Blair is a wonderful historical writer. And she told us that if whatever emotion you're feeling for that scene, if you're not feeling it, the reader isn't going to feel it either.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
If you're laughing, you know, that.
Yeah, I laughed and cried through it.
Oh, and that's perfect because then I'm sure your readers will do it as well. So, when you were going through school, were reading in English or writing, was that your forte, or did you gravitate to this later? Where did all that fall?
I think daydreaming was my forte, and then when I realized I could take that and put it into writing, I just found my perfect job. I wasn't a big school person. I hated school. I don't particularly love people, even at a young age, so I just did not like being there with people. I mean, I graduated and I did all that in college. I was always the oldest one in the class, which sometimes is irritating, but I made it through. And so, I wasn't particularly great at English or any of that, but I found my way.
Right. And you found your way to this, into writing. What was the very first thing you remember writing, like story-wise, other than your little gray dress? Had you written shorts or journaled or anything like that?
I hadn't journaled. I did take a creative writing class in college, one of the first ones that I took. And I wrote 3 short stories. They had to be like first person, second person, third person. So the persons were hard for me because I'm a first person writer. And so learning to do that and creating these stories to go with those persons, those are probably the stories that I remember the most. And I don't really even remember what they were about because this was long, long time ago. But it was so much fun to write these three different stories and to two different, you know, persons that I don't normally use. So those stand out to me.
Second person, for myself, is the hardest. First and third,
yes.
You know, I can. But second, that's just really very awkward to me.
It is.
Now, I do have friends that are brilliant at it, but I am not one of those people, for sure.
Yeah, me neither.
So are any of your kids interested in writing? Do you see that with any of them?
No, not yet. I do have artistic kids. So my oldest is very into music. My middle is an art student kid. She wants to do, like, comics. So I can see where writing may come into play for her at some point. But as
sure.
To just sit down and write a book, I just don't see that in any of them. They're just not patient enough for that one.
When you found out your book was going to be published, when you realized it was, you know, this was going to happen, what was the first thing you said to your family about it?
Oh, wow. So I didn't even tell my family I was writing a book. They knew I was interested in writing decades ago, but I didn't tell them I was writing a book until I had a published date. And so they were all really surprised. My hometown, the town I grew up in Oregon, they found out and they did a newspaper piece on me, and they wanted to call my parents to interview them. And my dad's answer was, I didn't even know she was writing the book until 2 days ago. So I kind of kept that one a secret. And he's read it. Even my dad has read it.
Wow. And mom, for my first, she helped me, but it was fun because I know my dad will never read my book. It's just, you know, he likes history stuff.
Yeah.
But he's very supportive. So it's kind of the same thing. It's like, oh, okay, congratulations. Good stuff. because I think that a lot of times, you know, you always have discussions, and you've probably been in them, where people are like, well, how hard can it be to
write,
you know, anywhere from 50 to 80 to 90,000 words? It's not easy.
And it's so hard. For me, once I hit that 30,000 mark, I'm just like, you know what? This whole thing sucks. And I've thrown so many manuscripts away. They just don't seem to be working at the 30,000 mark. It is a lot harder than it seems like it is.
Right. And yeah, because it can't be just he said, she said, this happened.
No.
You've got to keep people interested that whole time. And
yep.
Every word is very purposeful.
Yes.
So yeah, you're right. It's a process. When you were doing this, going through this, what kinds of resources did you use to help you with writing? Did you have any books on writing? Did you kind of just read certain authors that you liked their style? What was kind of your guidepost? How did that go?
Both. I read everything. So I have tons of books on writing. All of the emotion thesaurus books on writing, I have all those. And I read anything
right.
I can get my hands on that has to do with writing or creating better characters or plot lines or twists. So I'm constantly – I think I do that more than I actually write. So I'm trying to grow with each book, and so learning from those writing books helps me so much.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel like you either are a writer or not, and I don't – I think that everyone has, if you truly are interested in doing that, if you're truly interested in storytelling, I should say, yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you know how to put the story together.
Yeah.
So putting that craftive writing books like you're talking about are a huge resource.
Yeah,
what are some of your
definitely.
Favorites of those?
I love the Emotional Thesaurus set. It's
mm-hmm.
just so helpful. I love, there's a couple of them. I should have to go upstairs and look now. But the Emotional Thesaurus, if you get all of them, they're so helpful. Not only in picking, like, details about your character that maybe you hadn't thought of, but details that can work in other little strands throughout the story that could create something else that'll help you on page 742.
Right. And, yeah, it's and knowing, you know, five ways to say happy. You know?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. You don't ever realize that until your editor sends something back and she's like, you said fantastic 17 times.
Oh, yeah. Very.
In one paragraph. Yes.
Yes. Get rid of all the passive
yes.
voice. yes.
Yeah, that's
hard
to read.
Do you think that it's, and I guess this would also be author dependent, do you think that it's better for an author to try to get published with a publisher first or do indie or be hybrid?
I think they should do whatever their heart wants. My dream was always to have an agent and to get a publisher. But there are so many indie authors that are doing so well that it's crazy.
Yeah.
And the process for agents and publishers is so, I don't even know, frustrating.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it's like, it just depends on what you're willing to put up with, I guess.
Right, and how patient you are, too, because it is a process for sure.
It is, and how much you want to learn, because I know quite a bit about self-publishing, but not enough that I think I'd enjoy it.
Right, and you know, granted, you are responsible for all of it, and some people very much like that autonomy. But of course, then you're also responsible for all of the marketing and everything else and making sure everything's up. So I think people who are really super organized probably do better with those kind of situations. But I kind of like the hybrid route, you know, but I mean, of course, what comes first, your self-published or your published, you know, traditionally published, I think the journey varies depending on the writer.
It does, and it changes every day. So you never know what you're walking into with publishing.
Are you part of a writer's group as well, whether online or in person?
I'm not, no. See, in Montana, there's nobody at her that writes romantic comedy. And like I said, I'm not really, I don't love people. and I'm not really online because I have such a hard time. So we run a business on the side. So I have such a hard time staying on a schedule. And a lot of the writing groups are on schedules and I just can't. I can't conform.
Yeah. And you've got kids and you've got all this stuff going on. So it does.
Yeah.
It makes it difficult. But
it
you've stuck with it. You've given yourself that time to write every day for sure.
Yes, I do. I just love it. If I don't do it, these characters just talk nonstop.
Yeah. Have you done the thing where you're driving down the road and you're talking, but you want to make it look like you're talking on the phone, but you're really like talking out a scene and out loud?
All the time.
Okay, yeah. Because I was about to say, I haven't. Yay.
I talk to myself. I'll be doing the laundry, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, my God, this would be great. And I'm running to the stairs to find my laptop just so I can jot it down.
I know there was one scene I had years ago where I had to have it in a I was in a coffee shop, and I couldn't come up with any really great, you know, yell outs from the baristas. So I just went over and sat at Starbucks for 2 hours and wrote down everything they called out. And it's the craziest combinations of stuff. You know,
I can imagine.
I guess I'm maybe too boring. But, you know, half-calf latte, super hot with 3 Splendas and a drop of honey. It's like, really?
It's like that scene in You've Got Mail where he's complaining about all of the coffee types.
Yes. Yes. Speaking of that, what movies, because you're watching Netflix here obsessively, and so it says, what kind of shows do you binge watch, and does that help you with your writing process?
It does. So I'm a romantic comedy lover in TV, too. So sitcoms, anything funny, movies, anything, you know, Reese Witherspoon, Katherine Heigl, I got them all. YouTube, you might be surprised, I'm actually addicted to ghost hunting and paranormal and crime, and so I kind of have that side too, but I save it for YouTube. It's like my but it does help me, and a lot of it is because I watch the YouTube series that are like live, they're not heavily edited. So again, you find that scene where you're like, that's ridiculous, going in a book. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
So it does help. I think it does.
It does. And I think, too, sometimes, I mean, there's always the discussion of do you read what you write? And I think sometimes we do. But I think other times, like you're saying, takes you out of that for a little bit. So when you do go back in, you're a little bit more refreshed and your brain's kind of reset a little. Is it?
Exactly. It's like a palate cleanser.
And yes, exactly. So you've got your two books. What is coming up next for you?
So
writing one.
In my first book, there was a side character by the name of Liam Jackson. And I still to this day get emails asking for his story. And so his story is actually my third book. It's written and it's with my editor right now. And it comes out in September. So I have no name for it yet. But Liam is next.
Isn't that exciting when your readers write to you and say, what about this character? Had you already considered writing a story for him? Or was that because of the writers?
I had considered it because I really liked that character too. And so because I had so many people asking me, I agreed, yes, this will be my third book. And then when I tried to get into it, there's so much expectation for this character that I had the hardest time writing this book because I felt like, what if I write him wrong and they no longer like him? Or what if I choose the wrong girl? I mean, just every question possible went through my head. But
sure.
In the end, I think I like it. It's just that question of everybody loves this person so much and he was hardly even in the first book. How do I keep that for a book all about him?
Well, and the brilliant part about that is because you gave such a limited window, you know, your new book will just get us, you know, we'll be able to see such a bigger version of him. And that's a lot of fun.
It is.
Well,
and
I think
yeah, I think it'll be liked. I think so.
Well, how wonderful. And you don't have you know September, but you don't know an exact release date for it yet.
I don't have an exact release date yet. No, I just know September 2019.
Okay. And what's coming after that? Do you have any projects in the works?
I do. I am working on, I'm actually outlining right now. So I will have a fourth book. I think it will be April-ish.
Okay.
And so it's going to be, there's no characters or in any of the other books. It's totally standalone, just like The Last Dance. I'm excited for that one too.
Wow. So you're staying plenty busy.
I am, yeah.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left. So I wanted to say thank you so, so much for coming and talking with us today. If you wanted to find Amy's newest book, The Last Dance, it is available for pre-order right now. I have a link in the write-up of the show. It will hit your e-readers on the 16th, or you can order a print copy. And if you're looking for Amy online, it's A-I-M-E-E Brown, B-R-O-U-N. She's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, BookBub, Pinterest, and her website. All those links are in the write-up of the show. So we have about a minute left. So tell me what is on your to be read pile right now.
Right now I am about halfway through One Day in December. I think that's what it's called, and it's so good. I love it. And I'm also in the process of reading Until the Last Star Fades by Jacqueline Middleton, and it is super good too.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'll have to check those out. And how are you?
Yes.
How are you doing on your bachelor's degree for your English?
It's slow, but it's going. You know how that goes.
Little bit by little bit, right? Slow and steady.
Little bit by little bit. By the time I'm 80, I'll probably be there.
Hey, you know what? It's done. It doesn't matter. You go back, you finish. My mom did the same
right?
thing.
Right, exactly.
Went back in her late 40s and said, "I'm getting this degree," and she did. So, you know, good
we
for you for doing that, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So thank you so, so much for coming on the show today. And please keep us posted on your future project.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun.
I'm glad. And stay warm.
Yes. Yes, you too.
So that was me, Patricia W. Fisher, talking to author Amy Brown for Readers Entertainment Radio. And we will see you guys next time. Keep on reading.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.